most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
This is the best thing to wear for today. You understand?
Yeah.
Because I don't like women in skirts. And the best thing is to wear pantyhose or some pants under a short skirt, I think. Then you have the pants under the skirt. And then you can pull the stockings up over the pants underneath the skirt.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always take off the skirt and use it as a cape. So I think this is the best costume for today.
Okay.
I have to think these things up, you know. Mother wanted me to come out in a kimono, so we had quite a bite.
Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci, and welcome to another Sunday night's edition. And guess who that was? Well, that was my girl, Little Edie Beal. Now, y'all know Grey Gardens. Y'all know I'm one of the biggest fans of the movie, the documentary, the original one. And you know what today is? Today is the anniversary of the original documentary that was released in 1976. Now, y'all know about these two women, the Beals, Edie Beal and Little Edie Beal. Well, they were just these two eccentric women that if they were to be living today, you know that they would be here live on Max and Friends, just because I love eccentric, crazy people. And they are two of my favorite in history. You know, they were the cousins and the relatives of Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, who had this beautiful home in the Hamptons. And then, you know, the mother was this eccentric woman who slept with the piano player, and the father left them with bills to pay. Like a lot of you are living today with bills to pay. So what happens? They lose their money. Their house becomes dilapidated. And Grey Gardens is born, the documentary. Well, Little Edie is an eccentric woman that I absolutely love. And we have tonight one of the photographers who shot her last days and moments at Grey Gardens. So we're going to be with Frank in just a moment. But I've got to say hi to everybody at Disney World in Orlando, Florida. I was there this weekend. I got to say hi to all my Disney people. We had a wonderful time. It was my first time there ever. I loved every moment of it. Disney.com. Go check it out, because you're going to find some wonderful things to do there with your family. Today is also my good friend Eduardo Zoll's birthday. Y'all remember Eduardo Zoll? He was one of the designers from Extreme Makeover Home Edition. Well, Eduardo and I did a great book called Extreme Entertaining Made Simple. So if you go to Amazon.com right now, you can get that book and you can enjoy how to have a great dinner party. I have the first chapter called The Classic Dinner Party. I designed a few things in there. And just have a good old-fashioned time. Well, everyone, I've got to tell you the truth. I am beat. I am tired. I am like, really? But you know what? I'm always here for y'all, because this is Max and Friends on LA Talk Radio. I've got to give a big shout out to Rolanda Watts. She has a new show on Blog Talk Radio called Sundays with Rolanda. And I was on her show today. We were talking about Whitney Houston. Y'all know that Whitney died, passed away. We don't know how yet, but we know that it's going to be something interesting in the next coming weeks to find out what really happened to Whitney. So we might actually have Whitney on the show. Does that sound weird, that Whitney Houston might be on Max and Friends? Well, I'm going to let you know how when we get closer to that date. But other than that, how y'all doing? What's up? I want to hear from you. Tweet me at twitter.com/Max Tucci. You know, I'm up for a Shorty Award. So if you go on Twitter, go to Shorty Awards and vote for me there, because I need you, the public, to help me win this award. I'll dedicate it to you all, because you know that's how we roll. Plus, you know, Max Tucci was Celebrity Site of the Day, so go check out maxtucci.com, because that was a fun site. We were the Celebrity Site of the Day on February 5th. So I got to say hi to everyone at Celebrity Site of the Day. Well, without any further ado, you know what, Ronan? Can we play one of my favorite clips from the movie Grey Gardens, everyone? If you haven't seen it, I suggest you go get it now. And when we're done with this clip, Frank is going to be here, who's an amazing man who had the opportunity to take the last pictures of Little Edie Beal at Grey Gardens. So we're going to talk to him and figure out what's going on. What was going on, really, and how was it like to be at that infamous house? And then after Frank, we're going to go into PTSD. Do y'all suffer from it? Do y'all know what it is? Well, Dr. Kathy Zeeb is going to be back so we can talk about it. Plus, we have an amazing woman, Leslie, and her story of PTSD. Let's try to get you all past the past and into the now, as I like to say. We're going to live in the now. Big Endings 2 is Kathy's new book, Dr. Zeeb. Go so good. Check it out on Amazon.com. But right now, Ronan, hit my girl, Lil Edie Beale from Grey Gardens.
Dress for battle, Edie.
Mother's telling Marjorie how spoiled I am, how terrible I am. And Marjorie knew my father and my uncle. Mother's giving her all this S-H-I-T, so I went and told some things about the family. But you see, in dealing with me, the relatives didn't know that they were dealing with a staunch character. And I tell you, if there's anything worse than a staunch woman, S-T-A-U-N-C-H. There's nothing worse, I'm telling you. They don't weaken, no matter what.
S-T-A-U-N-C-H, staunch women, they don't weaken. Well, welcome, Frank, to Max and Friends, and let's talk about Little Edie Beale. How you doing, Frank?
Hey, it's great to be here, Max. It was great hearing her voice, even if it was recording on the phone, but that was a great piece.
What memories does her voice bring back to you, Frank?
One of her memories actually brings back when we were sitting outside, and she was sitting on a beach chair. We were just rapping outside the Grey Gardens, and we were talking about characteristics of Italians because I was Italian. And I said, well, if there's one thing I'd want to change about myself, it'd probably be my Italian nose. She says, Frank, you know how she drags out her words, and I don't want to embarrass myself and say it on the radio the way she does, but... She said, Frank, you have a classic Italian nose. I wouldn't change a thing. And that was one of the things that always remained in my memory. She was a flirt. Yes,
oh,
she was.
Oh, Frank. Actually. Right? Oh, Frank.
Don't change
the nose.
Fantastic. Yes, that's exactly how. You got to love it, Max.
I absolutely adore her. And, you know, there's so many people that love her. But you had the opportunity to actually have your camera. What year was this? 1970?
It was 78, close to 79. My memory's that bad, but it was somewhere in between there. And it was right. Go ahead.
No, and now here you are in the presence of what became, you know, Little Edie always wanted to become an icon. She always wanted people to talk about her. You know, if she were alive right now, she would probably be freaking out that there was a radio show even mentioning her name because she thought she was this grand celebrity in her mind. And in reality, it took all these years later to today for her to become this wonderful icon, this pop icon, let's say, where Drew Barrymore, you know, everyone, Drew Barrymore played her in the movie Grey Gardens and actually won the Golden Globe for her role of Little Edie Beale. So how was it being in her presence, Frank?
Well, let's define Edie for one. Edith Beale was a love story. She was a story of hopes and dreams unfulfilled. She was a riches-to-rags story. It was a heart-wrenching story, first of all, to a huge audience. So I don't care whether you're heterosexual, homosexual, what religion you were. People just took to Edie. She was a story of unique fashion based on necessity, Max, which influenced many designers to this day. She was I guess you'd call her an enigmatic human, hard to totally define, but labeling her eccentric, well, there was truth to that, but not totally correct. I think she was... I feel just different, okay? And, well, you can look at it this way. Her life was barely outside the confines of Grey Gardens, and her life with her mother, well, was with her mother, her cats, and, you know, and her hopes and dreams. That's where she was. And here's an interesting fact that most people didn't know that know of my photographs. I've never even knew about the documentary when I met her, and actually, when I photographed Edie, I had no clue there was a documentary made about the life of her and her mom at Grey Gardens. I saw Edie on a talk show, and I cannot remember to this day which it was, but I knew she was somehow related to the Kennedy family at the time, which I had a mild fascination with. However, I did not catch the whole story on this, and as a student of photography, I was always searching for interesting characters. Well, there she came. She was on this TV show, and as a student, I was looking for interesting people to photograph. Well, bing, bang, there she was. I saw her on TV. I decided I got to photograph this woman, so I decided to give her a call. I didn't have her number. I looked it up, and to my surprise, actually, on the, it was listed in the directory. And I built up the courage, fearing rejection, to call her up and see if, you know, I could possibly meet her and possibly take a few photos. And little did I know to this day that a photo of mine would be published in Harper's Bazaar in the United Kingdom. I would be credited on the Grey Gardens HBO movie with Drew Barrymore, so forth and so on. And it was exciting to me because what started off as basically a school project turned out into kind of an obsession of my own through the years, because I run a website that sells her photographs.
Tell us about your website. Where can people find your website?
They can go to islandbreezearts.com. That's islandbreezearts.com. And on this site, basically, there are photographs I took of her during that time. And there's a story about how I met her. There's even a letter that she had sent to me on this during a time I've known her. You know, I didn't. Here's the one thing I have to emphasize. You know, I didn't photograph Edie waving the American flag and dancing before the cameras to a military march song. It's kind of my opinion that Edie's eccentricity was the focus in the relationship to the Kennedys family, not really the person. And my purpose was to capture Edie in a never-seen reality that the Maisels never fully captured. For example, I think they enticed Edie to ham it up for the cameras.
Were natural producers. You know, they were grinding her up, and they were giving her the camera. But what you did, you know, and I found – this is odd, because how I found you was my obsession with Grey Gardens, everyone knows about, all my listeners here, so they know that I absolutely love the show. And I was actually on eBay looking for Grey Gardens memorabilia. And all of a sudden, up pops a picture of yours. And what grabbed me about your picture was the authenticity of private moments. You really, your camera caught these private, intimate moments with little Edie that I don't think.
Well, you'll notice that in my images, Max, that Edie looks, okay, she looks sad, emotionally drained, and understand that this was her true emotions at the time, because her mother had previously passed away, and she was now facing her unknown future of leaving Grey Gardens and actually putting it up for sale. But don't get me wrong, I salute the Maisel brothers for introducing Edie to the world, but I was just never really happy that the basis of their documentary really was, it was kind of like a resemblance of a modern-day reality show.
She's the Hampton Shores instead of the Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
But I want to go back to that day when you actually have your camera in hand, you arrive in her presence. What was that like?
Glad you asked, Max. Here's this Italian boy from Mount Vernon, New York, come from a relatively poor family. I just, you know, go out there to visit her, take the Long Island Railroad. And I didn't know how far it was from the train station. I wound up taking a cab, and there's all these expensive mansions around there, you know, playgrounds for the rich, and they were summer homes. And the taxi takes me up to this house, and it's this gray-looking, dilapidated old mansion. I said, could this be the place? I got out, my camera equipment, and I didn't seem like I even belonged there. I think even the police were looking at me. I had long hair, my sunglasses on, my camera equipment. I felt kind of odd. I was out of place, Max. Anyway, I approached the estate. And I go, Edie, and she's over at the screen door. It was kind of slightly torn, and she kept it locked, and she kind of peered out and said, is that you, Frank? I said, that's me. So she kind of hesitated before she came out. She had to feel that trust, and she finally opened the door and came out, and we talked a while, and the next thing you know, she was showing me the house, and we walked through all the rooms, and just an incredible experience just going
in
the house.
Now, what was she wearing?
That day, she was actually wearing her famous tiger stripe and leopard print skirt.
And now, you know, everyone, she suffered from alopecia, you know, so she lost her hair. Now, was she wearing her famous scarf with the brooch?
No brooch, but she did have the scarf on. She invited me in for lunch, and I was laughing to myself, of course. They're the old days of wealth. They used to have their expensive pâté. And we sat down at the kitchen table, and there were cats crawling all over the place. And she opens up a can of Underwood chicken spread, a loaf of Wonder Bread, and a can of Budweiser beer. And that was our lunch. And meanwhile, the cats, about three of them, were on the table at the time. And I guess
what were you thinking?
I felt at home. I felt this is real Edie. This is who she is right now. She's living within her means. She can't afford the expensive pâtés she used to have, and she's living within her means. She used to give her cats, the raccoons, she used to give them a lot of Wonder Bread in the attic.
Yeah.
And Underwood chicken spread, well, it was cheap, and, well, that was our lunch, and I thought it was great.
Now, let me ask you, because, you know, the house was dilapidated, everyone, for those of you who don't know. If you don't know about Great Gardens, y'all need to know now. Y'all need to know who Frank is, because we're going to tell you an opportunity at the end of the show where you can buy pictures of Little Edie Beale, original photos from Frank, and also, if your budget's big enough, you can even buy some of the negatives. But we'll get into that in a minute. But, Frank, I want to talk to you about that day, because, you know, the house was dilapidated. Jacqueline Kennedy Bouvier-Onassis, Jacqueline Bouvier-Kennedy-Onassis, gave them money, I guess, for her own image, because she didn't want the press to slaughter her by saying she was this cheap bitch who didn't help her family. So she helps them rebuild their house so the Department of Health doesn't take it away. This is all a true story, too, which blows my mind. So is the house now in the state where it's livable? Were you in that? Did you feel it was
when
livable?
When I went there,
I didn't get
any flea bites. I didn't get any flea bites, thank goodness for that. The house was livable. It still needed painting up here and there. The piano in one of the rooms, I couldn't believe it was an expensive piano, and there was actually some ceiling that fell down onto the piano. There was a bookcase that was just covered with dust from the ceiling. Then there was a room where she had her mother's picture, that famous portrait that I have in one of my photographs, and this was sitting against the wall, and the wall looked rather dirty and whatnot. It was a beautiful painted photograph of her mom. It's one of my treasured photographs where she's standing actually next to her photograph with her mom, and that was incredible. But you mentioned the relatives, and I wanted to say something quick on that.
Absolutely.
You know, what gets me is that while Edie and her mom were destitute, eating, for all I know, cat food, and not having electricity, etc., okay, prior to Jackie even helping her, where were the relatives, is my question, helping out these people? I'm not going to name names, but there are relatives and people that are making money. And I'm not a relative, you know, but there are people that are exploiting the Beals, and they weren't even part of their life. They didn't help them out with electricity or food or anything. But now that she's dead, you know, yeah, they're writing books, they're writing this and that. But the one thing I could say for myself, I didn't exploit Edie in that fashion. I wasn't related to her. I didn't try to make her look eccentric. I just tried to focus my camera on this person as to who she was. And that was the basis. I just basically put together a website. And, you know, I wasn't trying to write books on her. And I'm not a relative that's claiming to be so close to her. But yet, where were they, Max, when it was
Of course. You know, Edie had brothers, and there's nieces and nephews and grandchildren and so on and so forth. No, there were no grandchildren, but the grandchildren of the brothers. You know, and the thing that's interesting, I agree with you. You know, and the thing in the story, you know, it's a true story, everyone. So if you haven't seen it, definitely see Great Gardens. Today is the anniversary. It was original documentary released in 1976 today. And what's interesting is that the family, you know, when you're down, you're down. And no one wants to know you. But when you're up, everyone wants to, you know, come out of the woodwork. So it's interesting. I agree with you. And I find it sad that when they were living there and these raccoons were living in the walls and the mother and daughter were in the same bedroom and the house was falling apart, where were they? But, you know, Frank, thus is life. People don't want to know you when you're down. But what's interesting is that even though that they were in such a state of misery, let's say, Little Edie wasn't really that miserable. She still was a character through it all, through the dilapidation. And in your photos, it did. And in your photos, you know, they say, what do they say? I don't remember the saying right now because all I'm focusing on is I'm looking at a picture right now and it threw me, one of your pictures. And you just catch this raw moment of ignorance is bliss is what I want to say. You know, she had this ignorance to what was really going on around her. Nor did she, I don't think she even really cared. But you have these raw pictures of her where you're like, captured that moment, because you always saw Edie in the documentary as this outgoing, like you said, you know, the baton waving, flag waving, cheerful, let's do this, you know, yeehaw kind of a girl. But you catch her in these somber moments, and your pictures really tell me what you did.
What I did, Max, actually, you know, a camera lens is very intrusive to people when you're taking, say, intimate photographs of them, and you really want to capture a character. When you have the Maisel brothers with the camera lens pointed at them, you know, 5 feet away, or, you know, she almost feels like she has to do something in front of the camera and dance and whatnot, and that's what they wanted. But what I did with Edie's, I tried to build her confidence up, and I tried to just snap shots of her when she didn't really expect it. Most of the shots were unposed. There was a few that were posed, but I tried to capture in a moment. It didn't matter. She was sad looking. She was in train of thought at Georgia Beach. She was sitting there in one photograph where she had her hand under her chin, and she was deep in thought, and she was sad. And I've had people write to me and say, well, I don't like your photographs, Frank, because they look so sad. And I'd write back and I'd say, well, you know what? Edie was sad. She didn't know what she was going to do with her life. Her mom had died. She was ready to sell the house. I'm the only photographer actually in the world who has actually put photographs up for public viewage and for sale. There is no other photographer in the world. And these are not clips from Grey Gardens documentary, nothing of the sort. But I think my biggest thrill was having a research assistant's credit on the HBO multi-award winning movie starring Drew.
Right.
And speaking of Drew and Jessica and Mr. Baldwin, if you're out there, this is your opportunity to purchase these negatives. And the reason I have them up for sale is because I decided, Max, to retire them. I'm not an old man. I'm turning 58. But I want these things to be preserved. I want them to be archived. I want somebody else to be able to take these images and do something great with them and turn them on for other generations to see. I've ran the website for over 10 years, so folks, when this website is gone, that means when the negatives are sold, it's a rare opportunity to buy these negatives. You're not going to find
super
it
rare.
Anywhere.
No,
anywhere.
Let me tell you, everyone. You know, everyone, you know how I roll here at Max and Friends, and I try to find you the most interesting people that I can. And this is, you know, when Neiman Marcus sells those extraordinary Christmas gifts? This is it. This is one of those gifts. This is one of those amazing things in life that's a one-in-a-lifetime opportunity to own the last pictures of little Edie Beal taken at Grey Gardens. These are original negatives, everyone. So it's not like, you know, we're giving you some bullshit. We're giving you the real deal here. So it's a rare opportunity. The price range, they range. It depends. If you guys all want, you can – hey, Frank, where can people contact you?
Well, if they go to my website, which is, again, islandbreezearts.com, or you could put the HTTP in semicolon,
yeah.
Double forward slash,
islandbreezearts.com, yeah, islandbreezearts.com.
Right, you can go there, and you could find contact information for me there. You could see the images, you could read my story, you can read a letter that Edie wrote me that these were the best photographs anyone's ever taken of me, and you could do a little research on there. And whether you want to buy the photographs, they are for sale. They come in 8x10 and 11x14. You got
and
a choice.
And for those,
there.
What are the price range from those?
The 8x10s are selling for $35, and they're signed. And the 11x14s, I believe, are $50. And these are signed by me, not Edie, of course. And they're available as many as you want. As I said, if you have a slightly deep pocket, you may want to take advantage of the – I'm not selling all my negatives, but what I'm selling is the images, the negatives you see on my website. So if you're a collector, you're a Grey Gardens fan, you're a gallery or what have you, celebrity, this is your opportunity to own these negatives. They come with full rights. Nothing to do with me anymore. Full rights on these images. It's yours as long
Absolutely.
As I get the credit as photographer.
Well, you know what's so great, Frank, is that we found you. You're out there because Grey Gardens didn't end the day little Edie died. And I think that, you know, there's a great saying that every time you say my name, my spirit shall live. So little Edie Beal, this one's for you. Frank, I thank you so much for being here tonight. Islandbreezearts.com is the website. Everyone, I suggest go there, buy the prints. If you got the pocket, if you got the money, by the negatives on this rare opportunity because it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And, of course, we're giving it to you here on Max and Friends and LA Talk Radio. Frank, next year at this time, we're going to have you back, too, so we can talk about Little Edie. But before we let you go, what's your most fondest memory of Little Edie Beale?
My most fondest memory? I guess it would have to be when she's talking about Republicans. She didn't like Republicans. And she went on and on and on about Republicans. And I also, well, I'm not a Republican, so I kind of related to her, and we had a good laugh about that.
Well, I would wonder what she would say right now about all this nonsense going on with the Republican committee, with the debates and everything else. It would be interesting.
Oh, I dare to say. But one last thing, though. Edie did die a happy woman in Florida. She got to do her swimming in the warm waters of Florida, and she did live to at least see her documentary and whatever else happened afterwards. So Edie did see a little bit of fame, and now she's dead, but she's also remembered by thousands of people. Go to Facebook, they have a Grey Gardens fan site. There's like 30,000 people on there alone. It's just an amazing person. She's kind of a cult hero she's become. And
she's a pop icon. We love her.
I think she's here to stay.
Oh, she is. Little Edie Beale, you're not going anywhere. And Frank, I thank you so much. IslandBreezeArts.com is the website. People go there, get the pictures, buy the negatives, make Frank happy, buy the collection. All right, Frank, my friend, we're going to have you back on next year at this time to talk more about Little Edie Beale and Grey Gardens. Have a great night.
Thanks for having me, Max. I appreciate it.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is the best thing to wear for today, you understand?
Yeah.
Because I don't like women in skirts. And the best thing is to wear pantyhose or some pants under a short skirt, I think. Then you have the pants under the skirt. And then you can pull the stockings up over the pants underneath the skirt.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always take off the skirt and use it as a cape. So I think this is the best costume for today.
Okay.
I have to think these things up, you know. Mother wanted me to come out in a kimono, so we had quite a bite.
This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. And that was my girl, Sharon. Hey, Ronan, do me a favor. What is everyone listening to right now?
LA Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends.
LA Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. Welcome back, everyone. Well, I've got a question for you. Do you all suffer from PTSD? What is it? Do you want to know more about it? Do you feel you're suffering through a traumatic experience in your life and you don't know how to get past it? Well, I've got a guest coming on now, and she's going to tell you a lot more about PTSD. And then we've got my buddy, Dr. Kathy Zeeb, coming back because she's going to help us walk through it and live in the moment of the now. Okay, so I just have an echo in my ear. We're going to straighten this out in a minute. And what we're going to do is introduce my new guest, Leslie, to Max and Friends. So welcome to Max and Friends, Leslie.
Hey, Max.
How are you doing, Leslie?
I'm doing good tonight.
Wonderful. Well, you know what? We're just having a little technical difficulty. So, Ronan, why don't you hit a new song? Let's pull up. Oh, are we good now, Ronan? Are we good? Hey, Leslie, how you doing?
Oh, very well. Thank you.
Here we go. We've got, you know, it's technology. It's modern days. It's what happens. But nonetheless, I am so glad that you're here because it's been in the works that we're going to have you on. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and about PTSD?
Okay. Well, I wrote a book called Flashbacks and Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, Surviving Through the Flood. My book is about my courageous journey as a little girl who struggled to survive sexual, physical, and emotional abuse because of the parental negligence and lack of supervision. This caused me a lot of trauma. I have been suffering for probably all my life, but 11 years ago is when I started having symptoms of panic attacks, dizzy spells, fainting, and also my health started going downhill. I started having nervousness and not being able to parent my children like I should be able to because they would trigger me back to my abuse with my ex-husband. So, yeah.
So you had a very rough childhood, a very unfortunate
yes.
one. It was a monstrous one, actually, for the things that happened to you with not one, not two, not three, but how many people were involved in your childhood, rape, molestations, and just awful, awful barbaric actions?
I had nine total. My parents, you know, they were very neglectful, but it was due to them being abused as they were children. My grandmother, my mother's mother, she would force feed me to the point of choking. My great uncle was someone that would touch and hug you really close, and we used to call it having to say goodbye. I had a boyfriend that I trusted in eighth grade, and he was a junior in high school. Again, there was no parental supervision of who I went out with, how I dressed. So this person spent time to get to know me, and he ultimately ended up raping me. My friend's brother and dad, this was really unfortunate because we didn't always have food in our home. And when we moved to Oshkosh, we had to find our own food source when we didn't have food in the house. So I went to my friend's house, but ended up having to participate in being molested by her brother and then having to watch her be molested by her father. And then my ex-husband, I ended up marrying into an abusive spousal relationship. And then myself, because I ended up turning my abuse inwards and, you know, getting to the point where I was obese and didn't understand what was going on with me.
Mm-hmm. Now, of all these abusers, did you actually confront any of them?
Yes, I did. For my friend, I actually tried to get a hold of her. And I wanted to talk about healing. And I started emailing her and told her I had PTSD now, conversion and somatization disorders. I asked if she would be able to talk to me about what happened to us because our three secrets that we'd shared was something we never talked about, and this started in second grade. She cut off communication with me when she obviously was still in the denial stage of what happened to us. My ex-husband, I did confront last year, and he told me, you know, I didn't like myself 13 years ago. And he said he didn't remember our marriage. He said he doesn't have a temper anymore. But I didn't believe him because my daughters now have PTSD also. And due to memories that we have uncovered through therapy, that he was still repeating his patterns when he remarried a woman with six boys. And she stayed with him for 10 years. My mom and dad, it was very hard because yeah. I was so reliant on my parents. I just like never left the nest. I had them, I started talking with my mother, and my mother started telling me, you know, this is really painful, but if you need this to go through the stages of healing, I will do this for you. And she stopped denying what happened to us and started validating and helping me heal. And the circumstances that contributed to her not being the parent she wanted to be was, you know, really exciting, because all our lives, like I have three other sisters who have some of the same problems, and they never got to that point with my parents. My rapist, I was never able to confront because obviously I don't want to put myself in that position where there's, you know, going to be more hurt. I did write a letter to him voicing what I felt he did, what he took from me.
Now, Leslie, how many times do you believe you were raped?
Well, I feel like the rape that I had with the rapist was my ex-boyfriend. I count that as one time, because I count the other ones as being molested, but I guess it's the same thing. It's just a different word for the same thing.
So then, in fact, you know, I'm sorry if this is getting uncomfortable for any of you listeners out there right now, but we want to get to the heart of the matter, which is how to really cope with things and how to live in the now, live in the moment, understand who we are now is not who we were then. And what happened to us negatively or anything bad that happened to us in the past doesn't define who we are this present moment. So y'all digest that for a moment. Understand that the power of now is the most important place you could be in, and that your past does not define who you are. Do you believe that, Leslie?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So let's go back then. So now your boyfriend raped you, and then yep. Growing up, were you raped at all by anyone else in your town?
Well, just my great uncle never raped me totally, but he would fondle me. Hmm. And the molestation was touching and having me do things to my friend's brother. So that never got to the point of intercourse because I wouldn't go that far. And I watched my friend, however, watched her do that with her brother. And I just could not believe my eyes as a yeah. child. I was, you know, second grade.
And now your book is called?
Flashbacks and Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, Surviving Through the Flood.
And it's and almost published. You're working on it now. And now tell me real quick, because we're going to have Dr. Kathy Z join us in a moment. She's going to help us
sure.
understand this better, because this is all new to me, and just give us a professional point of view, as I like to say it. But now your book is being written with the intention to...
Yes, my book is actually completed. I did hire Janelle Moon, and she's an award-winning author of nonfiction books, and she has 11 books that she published. She's helping me she helped me through the process of writing my book, and we edited it, and now we're doing the book proposal to get to the right agent and to get that introduction to the publishers now.
Absolutely. And now what's the intention of the book?
The intention is to help people. I don't want people to go through life like I did. Like I said, my symptoms started 11 years ago, and I didn't know what was happening to me. So when I would get triggered, my children wouldn't know what to do, because when you have PTSD, you have loud noises will bother you, any type of noise that will trigger you back to a flashback or a body memory. I would hold my ears and start yelling, please be quiet, please be quiet. And my husband would say, honey, we're not being loud.
Yeah.
And so it's very, very scary having the symptoms. But for me, I had the symptoms, but I didn't have the memories. I had repressed my memories for all those years since I was 3 until now. I repressed all the abuse memories. I knew snippets of what happened to me, but no details, no layout of the room, no feelings about it. It was like the first session I had with my therapist was like, hey, you know I had problems. I know that this is going on with me. This is what happened in my life. But it felt like I was reading off a grocery list.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, speaking of therapists, we're going to have Dr. Kathy Zeeb join us. She's going to be right with us. We're going to go to my favorite song again, Lead Me to the Water by Sharon Agati. And when we're back, Dr. Kathy Zeeb is here. Stand by, Leslie.
Great. Thank you.
Yesterday I heard somebody say the word spiritual. Take me closer.
Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Welcome back. Do y'all understand PTSD? Do you suffer from it? Well, I know that peace ain't easy because that was Sharon Agati singing, but I do know this, that the moment that we have right now is the moment we're exactly supposed to be in. Own it, hold on to it, and love it and cherish it. If you've been a victim of anything in your past, it doesn't define who you are. Who you are is absolutely beautiful. At this moment, I love you. And so does Dr. Kathy Zeeb. And she's back here with us tonight. And Leslie's here too. And Dr. Kathy Zeeb, I know you're listening to Leslie. Give us some informative, professional views on PTSD.
Excuse me, my voice. Well, it's a pleasure to be back. Thank you. I just want to say I've worked in trauma and domestic violence for like 10 years. And what I'm hearing, I mean, her story is so common. I have honestly heard, and not the fullness of all of the abuse that she has gone through, that Leslie has gone through specifically, but common as far as the symptoms of PTSD. Most definitely. They can show up at any time. You know, one of the things that I, when I work with my clients is, you know, our bodies have chemicals and it holds the emotions, such as victimization, anger, sadness, stress, whatever it is. And even when they split apart, they will split apart holding the same emotion. Nothing will change. So one of the things that's so important, as you keep saying, Max, and it's really beautiful, and it doesn't mean that it's easy. It just means that there are ways to move out of, you know, high stress and victimization and trauma that we have gone through. So if we can create the chemicals to create the stress and victimization and anger and sadness and all those kinds of things, then we can create the chemicals of more positive.
Mm-hmm. Now, Leslie, how did you create the chemicals to get you back into the positive aspect of life?
I actually started therapy. I have a wonderful therapist that started the EMDR, brain spotting, attachment therapy, equal state therapy with me. And I'm still actually, I see her every week, you know, and she taught me a lot of good coping skills on how I can have control of my triggers rather than my triggers having control of me.
Right. Dr. Kathy, right. What's the way that people can control their triggers?
Right. Well, you have to recognize them first. And I always talk about the voice of the body. And that it will hit somewhere in the body instantaneously when something is about, when you get triggered, which then becomes a thought, which then starts reacting in the ego mind to all the past experiences, and then you're going to react just like you did before. So if we can recognize the voice of the body, so those little pings and bangs and things that, you know, show up in the body, then we can go, ooh, there it is. I need to breathe. I need to come into the present moment because this is the only moment I have to change anything. If I allow myself to continue to go back into that past experience, nothing will ever change. And it's really a process and it's a journey to learn
Absolutely.
To do it. And it's not impossible. That's the beautiful part about it, is that it just takes the practice and the willingness to want it to be different.
Now, Leslie, what's changed for you since you've confronted your triggers?
I got my life back. I'm very happy. I used to live, you know, everyone would tell me, Leslie, you need to relax. And when I had my first therapy session, she asked me which part of my body was relaxed. And I said, I don't think I ever have been relaxed. I've been in the fight mode all day, every day of my life. And an example of that would be when my new husband would leave the house, I literally would be frightened, and I kept all my suffering to myself. I didn't want my husband to know. I kept it under wraps until I couldn't keep it under wraps anymore. When he would leave, I would sit up all night while my children are sleeping and be afraid that someone's going to come in my house, rape me again, rape my children. I would, you know, go around in my head about what happened to me. The layout of the room would come back to me. Every single detail of my rape would come back to me. And like I said, I'd stay up all night trying to figure out what in the room could I use as a weapon to protect myself. And until my husband would return, and sometimes he took a few days to go somewhere, and I would sleep for days because I was so exhausted. And since I started getting, the first time I had EMDR, we got that situated right away. She did
hold
the
that
EMDR.
Thought. Dr. Kathy, explain to us what EMDR is.
Yeah, EMDR is fabulous for trauma. It's really, they found it to be one of the best tools to use for trauma. They actually take you into the traumatic situation or begin to get you talking about it, and then they move their finger or a pencil or something. You don't move your head, and you move your eyes. And it resets the brain. It's a fascinating, fascinating tool. I personally don't do it, but I have there's one or two therapists up here that do, and we send a lot of trauma patients to her, so looked at it a little bit. But I was glad to hear that you were doing some EMDR, for sure.
Yeah.
Great. Mm-hmm. Now, Leslie, where can people find more information about PTSD?
They can go to my website, www.silencednolonger.com, and I have all the warning signs on my website of things that happened to me, health problems that may occur due to your trauma, the therapies I received, and also resources where they can find help.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, I thank you so much, Leslie, for being here tonight. I know your book, once it's published, will be a book that will help people, because I believe everyone has a story, and your story is not who you were, but it's who you're going to be and who you are at this moment, and how all these traumatic experiences in your life have made it an opportunity for others who are going through PTSD to recover and to become productive, happy citizens of the world. So thank you for being here tonight, Leslie.
Thank you so much for having me.
Have a wonderful night.
You
bye,
too.
Leslie.
Well, Dr. Kathy, you see, we always have fun stuff here. Now, Dr. Kathy, you all remember from Big Endings, one of my favorite books. Well, there's Big Endings, too, because it's all about living in the moment, isn't it, Dr. Kathy?
It is. That's all we have. So this one, I put the word is capitalized.
It is. It's not about the beginning. It's not about the ending. It's not about what you've been through, who put you through what you're going to go through, or who's going to put you through that. But it's about right now, my friend, Dr. Kathy. Well, you know, Dr. Kathy, we spoke earlier about my guest, Leslie, who's coming on tonight. And I think that Leslie's going, she's on the right path to life. And my well wishes to her and her book. I hope it's a success and it gets published quickly. And Dr. Kathy, your book is published right now. We can go to Amazon.com and get Big Endings too. It's a life class book, everyone, because there's new questions in the book that you can answer. It's an interactive book. It's a workshop book. So, Dr. Kathy, you know we're going to have you back on real soon.
Yay. Good. Thank you. Love to come.
I can't wait to have you back because we still have to do part three. That's going to be your next book, part three. But we'll stay in two right now, and we'll go to part three of another show at another time, and I can't wait to have you back. I can't wait to see you this weekend in Colorado because I'm flying out there on Thursday, so we'll have a fun time in the big Colorado.
I'm so excited to meet you in person, and I wish I had a book in hand to hand to you.
I'm going to go to Amazon.com like everyone else and get Big Endings 2 because that's where you're going to get it. It's a book that's going to set you free, people. This is life.
It is on there. I saw it. It is on there.
Well, Dr. Kathy, I'm going to talk to you after the show because I still have some questions about PTSD because to me it's all new. I'm a firm believer, you know, whatever we go through in life, we have to take responsibility for our own actions. We can't let others control us. We can't let others rule us. We can't let others influence our lives to be something where we're miserable. We have to look at negativity in the face and say, negativity, I own you. Fear, you don't exist because I am created to have wonderful powers, to live in this world, to live in this moment, and to be who I am, which is perfect. Dr. Kathy Zeeb, tell me.
Oh, real quick, I was just going to say one of my absolute favorite columns that's coming out in this next book, but it's one of my favorite I think I've written, is called Dream Better. And I started off just whoever taught you how to dream better. And what you're saying just felt like that to me. Like it's really about just move forward, dream better, dream bigger, be in the moment, decide what it is that you're doing. Don't be so stuck in everything that's happened. And it's an amazing, beautiful process.
Well, you know what I always say? I always say when you know better, you do better. When you dream better, you do better. So on that note, everyone, stay tuned to CBS News because it's coming up next. And before we go, here's some more words of one of my favorite eccentric people in life, Little Edie Beale. Dr. Kathy, I'll talk to you after the show. Good night, everyone, and
thank
take
you,
life
Max.
To the max.
Dress for battle, Edie.
Love is telling Marge me how spoiled I am, how terrible I am. And Marge, we knew my father and my uncle. Mother's giving her all this SHIT, so I went and told them things about the family. But you see, in dealing with me, the relatives didn't know that they were dealing with a staunch character. And I tell you, if there's anything worse than a staunch woman, S-T-A-U-N-C-H. There's nothing worse, I'm telling you. They don't weaken. No matter what.